The show is crap. I don't know what to do about it yet.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Welcome to our Femme Freak recap of Star Trek Discovery. I am Anita, and I'm joined by Ebony.
That's right. We're here to talk about episode number 3.
We are, and we are in the same room looking at each other. Well, I'm looking at Ebony. She's not looking at me.
No, I'm looking at my copious notes that I took for the show.
There's a lot of notes.
There are a lot of notes, and there are arrows. There are rankings. There are things that are circled. Things that I want to make sure we get to, so let's get it started.
All right.
Cue the music. We don't have a theme song yet. I mean, that's for season 2.
Are you going to sing it?
Sing what? The theme song?
The theme song.
I haven't come up with one yet. This show is crap. I don't know what to do about it yet.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so we recapped episodes 1 and 2 last week, and this episode starts 6 months after the events of episode 2.
Yeah.
Michael Burnham is a mutineer.
Yeah.
She got sentenced to life, and this opens up with her on a transport vessel.
This bogus-ass prison transport. Listen, there's no security on this prison transport, which is basically like a Greyhound bus in space. There's just the pilot. And then when something goes wrong, the pilot leaves the ship and gets blown off into space with like that space dust. I wanted to laugh so hard. What the fuck? I asked that question 17 times in the first 10 minutes of this episode, of the last 2 episodes, but this one especially, because I was just like, who is behind this? Why is no one thinking? This makes no sense.
It's so bad. Look,
yes.
This show is so bad. Like, I don't even want to dignify my time by like actually going through this section by section. Like, okay. She's on the shuttle, all the shit happens, and then boom, 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 a bigger ship comes and takes them in.
I told the people that I was going to talk about Burnham's hair in every episode. So I want to talk about that. Let's talk about how she got rid of that Vulcan bob and got that bomb set of curls.
It's cute.
I was very, very pleased because I was like, yes, this is the future. You can tell she's getting her prison ration of shea butter because that shit was moisturized. Those curls were defined. She looked impeccable. So Ebony's hair chat for week 3, thumbs up.
Perfect.
Yes.
Okay, but can we actually, one thing I started thinking about while we were watching this was...
Tell me, Anita.
I'm about to.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, like, okay, we've got our first woman of color as the star of a Star Trek show or movie, and she's a fucking prisoner? Like, I don't know why it just dawned on me, but it just dawned on me. And, like, she's in, you know, prisoner garb, and she's, like, everyone hates her, and is scowling at her, and I'm like, that is...
I'm less unsettled by that fact than the fact that this is the most military show in Star Trek history. So the fact that she's a prisoner, yes, you know, I take your point there, but just the fact that, excuse me, the narrative arc of this series is going to be about this kind of, like, martial, you know, reclamation of the Federation, or not the Federation, but Starfleet, and making it into this war-carrying body. The fact that a black woman is going to be the face of that, I do find that,
yeah,
you know, very troubling.
I completely agree with that. Yeah, so. I mean, do you want to talk about that right now, or you want to wait till we get to that part of the
Yeah,
show?
I mean, because, you know, like, the things that I want to make sure that we cover are generally quite superficial. I want to be honest with our listeners and let them know that after a rousing weekend at Geek Girl Con,
we are real tired.
We're real tired.
Yeah. But, okay, so, like...
So make sure to hit me up at Ebony Astor.
Oh, God, here we go.
Let me know what you think I've forgotten in
okay,
the course of this
so
episode.
So let's talk about big picture here. Because we were, you know, the first 2 episodes we took issue with, but we were like, okay, well, let's see where it goes, because it's clearly going to be different. She's going to be on a different ship with a different crew. And we're introduced to all of these new people. And also, we're introduced to the big picture story so far is that Lucius Malfoy is building, using spores to fly faster.
Yes.
Right? And so he
picked, I think that's what's happening.
Basically, I mean, whatever. So there's that bullshit, like, look what Bro can do with all the flashing, like, environments he put her through in that tube of spores or whatever. But, like, he picked her because she thinks outside the box, and she thinks outside the rules. In a way that will win wars.
Yes.
In a way that is, like, aggressive and violent, and he liked that she wanted to mutiny. Mm-hmm. He liked that she wanted to shoot first.
Yeah.
Because Starfleet principles don't matter in this, when you're at war. And we were reminded of this over and over. And he said, they gave me discretion to fight this war however I want.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here being like, what happened to Star Trek?
Yeah, exactly. No, this is not the Starfleet that I
He literally says this is not a democracy at one point, too. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, while we hear all of the other horrible things, including the lead up to the title of the episode, so universal law is for lackeys, context is for kings, and it was just like, well, apparently the laws don't apply to some people, rules don't apply to some people, you know? If you're going to behave in a diplomatic manner, if you're gonna, you know, not shoot first and ask question later, then that means you're a chump. Yeah. Context is for kings, you know?
It's so...
Coffee is for closers.
I've never heard that.
Oh my God. Hit me up at Ebony Aster and let me know you caught that reference.
I don't know.
Our listeners.
Okay, so we met a lot of new people.
Yes.
Who was your most interested person? There's Sylvia Tilly.
Yep.
There's Lieutenant Paul. There's that nameless
woman. Wait,
who's
Lieutenant Paul?
He's the Dazed and Confused guy. He's the insufferable
Alan Tudyk?
Piece of shit.
It wasn't Alan Tudyk.
His, like, warped little brother.
Yeah, like, he straight up looked just like Alan Tudyk. Anyways, my favorite, because I can tell already what they're going to do with her, is Commander Landry. That was the one whose name I couldn't catch, and so I had to go back and find out that's the chief of security.
Did they say what her name was?
Yeah.
Oh,
she
I
says
totally
it at the very beginning.
That.
Like, when she comes in and, like, strikes a pose and is like, bam, looks like we're going to be hauling trash. I automatically was like, I love this bitch. Because she's clearly going to be set up to be highly antagonistic to Burnham, you know? And I love that of the two women of color that they've now got on staff, they're like, listen, we need to put these two against each other, right? I think some really shady shit is probably going to be said. I'm going to be horrified week on week. Oh, and as a reminder, I will continue watching this show just because I'm blown away by how messed up it is.
It's so bad. Okay, so wait, what was her name again?
Landry.
So do you remember Michael Burnham gets pinged to go on when the show turned into Alien,
right,
randomly.
Right, right.
She got pinged to go there, and there's these shots of... oh my God, what's her name?
Landry.
Landry. Uh-huh. This ain't Friday Night Lights. What the hell is Landry shit? Anyways, when Alan.
Spit it out, Anita. Spit it out.
When Lieutenant Paul, Alan Tudyk's character, but not really him, is doing that fucking.
Do you think that guy doesn't get hired because he looks too much like Alan Tudyk?
Maybe.
But not enough like Alan Tudyk?
Maybe.
I bet he does.
Maybe. That could be his problem.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
It's all good. So he's doing that insufferable speech about why started his career in science and blah, and I'm smart and fuck you and blah, blah, blah. And they kept shooting back to Landry's face.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked almost sympathetic. And I kept waiting for, like, oh, the next scene there's going to be a thing that's, like, bonding them.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was nothing. And I was like, well, what was that creative choice? Like, why did you keep shooting to her face? Like, what are those reactions? Because usually you use reaction shots for a reason.
No, nothing. Nothing in this show makes
There's
sense.
No logic.
The show doesn't work on a narrative level. It doesn't work on a visual level.
No.
It doesn't work on a show running level.
It don't work
choice,
at all.
When you think they're going to go left, they go right.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is that at the beginning, Michael gets into a fight in the cafeteria.
She does sus mana. I like that. sus mana, which was Vulcan martial arts. And I swear to God, I was so ready for her to say, I gave him the Vulcan hello. But she didn't.
You were hoping for it.
Opportunity missed.
Yeah. But so Landry says, you know, they're talking about how it's like, she's like, I was raised on Vulcan, blah, 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 whatever. Landry's like, Vulcans should stick to logic.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, cool. The two women of color on this show are fucking racist.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. Or alienist or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a word for that.
Speciesist?
Speciesist? Yeah.
No, absolutely. But I think, first of all, the fact that that Burnham was fostered on Vulcan, I think could be very cool, right? But the fact that the show shows such little imagination that the people who foster her on Vulcan are Sarek and his wife, Amanda. I'm like, there are other Vulcans, people. Like, there are more than three Vulcans.
No.
Seriously. You know? And so I was just like, I don't know. I'm not with it, right? So we're going to keep coming back to her history on Vulcan. And that's one thing that I do like about the show and that you and I both talked about, how smart Michael Burnham is.
Yeah.
You know, I think like they could have gone away. They could have made her just like strictly a physical badass and just made her like kind of aggressive and in your face, which would have been an even more catastrophic choice. But the fact that we show her or rather we see her being just incredibly sharp, very creative, you know, coming up with these just out of the box solutions, I actually really like.
Yeah, I do too. Those are the moments that I'm like, oh, cool. Like, she's smart and she knows. And I'm enjoying that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, like, here's the thing. I don't, the acting isn't good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. She's not that great. And part of it is that, like, they have nothing to work with.
No,
and so
no.
The problem, one of the problems for me is, so the scene that I think was the absolute worst was between Dazed and Confused homeboy, Lieutenant
mm-hmm.
Paul,
mm-hmm.
and the conversation he had with the guy on the ship.
That was criminally bad.
But every time Lucius Malfoy is on screen,
mm-hmm.
he is so fucking good, and mm-hmm. he knows how to work with crappy material that everyone else looks awful on the show.
Yeah.
Like, I think that like everyone else's acting is so... His acting, I guess, dwarfs all the other acting. Is that,
I mean?
Like,
no, I totally get what you're saying. Although, you know, my homeboy, Doug Jones, gonna give him a shout out.
Sure.
Lieutenant
Saru. Sure. He's good.
Also
he's good.
Good. But no, I think like Sonequa Martin-Green is better than the material that she's given. I think, you know, and I also think that the direction that she's being given is kind of all over the place, you know?
Yeah.
So there are these moments where we see, like, you know, emotion peeking through, and she's given something to actually work with. But I don't think that the kind of stoic direction that she's being given serves her or the story well.
And I don't, yeah, like, I don't think I know her from anything else, but I do... I can see that she's probably not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that this is not a good role for her. And
right.
This isn't like, I'm like, I keep, she's supposed to be stoic and Vulcan, but like, it's not landing for me.
Well, no, because I think that the direction that they're taking her, instead of, you know, stoicism, is wooden, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's a, you know, complete kind of, like, there's no affect at all there, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree.
But I do think as we get further into the show, I'm hopeful here, that we'll be able to get more from her as she interacts with more crew members, maybe. I think the relationship, I hope, that she develops with Sylvia Tully?
Yeah,
Tully?
The roommate.
Yeah, is going to be good. Although, what the hell was that? You know, like,
dude,
I have special needs. And so, hey, like, what year are we in? And this is how we're treating neuroatypical people? You know, like, isolating
it's
them?
It's fucked up.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And also, the explanation that I'm allergic to polyester and it causes chronic snoring. So I have this bunk by myself. For real.
Right.
They can't fix chronic snoring.
Right. And
they can't deal with your allergies.
Also, they still have polyester.
That's what I'm saying.
What the fuck is wrong with them?
It don't make any sense.
And the Beatles reference.
Yes.
The Alice in Wonderland, Kirk reading a book that's like how many centuries old while she's fighting away from an alien?
Yeah, the reference to her being a temp. Are there still temps?
Yeah. And he even says, there's so much exposition. What did you call it?
I called it Exposition Junction.
It
is
was.
Straight up ridiculous.
Him Lucius Malfoy explaining that, like, we are now, like, we made fortune cookies back centuries ago.
Girl,
my family made fortune cookies. And then the world got better and we have no more poverty, but it's going back to that time.
If I was on that set, I would have knocked that bowl of fortune cookies straight into his face.
My favorite part, though, when he handed her the fortune at the end, and I was like really hoping that they would break it like a wishbone together.
I know. Another that opportunity missed.
Yeah, man.
Opportunity missed.
They got to get us in that writing room.
They
clearly
got a wooden bowl of fortune cookies and they got a tribble on his
they
back.
They got a fucking tribble.
I just wanted to say, I'm done. I'm signing off for the night. And yet, I'll be back next week. Why? Because Anita is making me do this podcast.
Whatever. You're the one that was like, I'm gonna watch it.
I know.
It
I'm totally lying. I'm trying to make it sound better, but really, I want to know where it goes. I want it to get better.
I know.
Another hardcore Star Trek fan reminded me today. The first season is always rough, and she's right.
Okay.
It's generally true. The first season can
totally
be real
agree.
Rough.
100% agree.
Typically, it's not rough in a like shitty. Like, politically shitty way.
Yeah, that's the thing that I'm not giving. I don't trust them. Like, mm-hmm. It can be rough acting-wise. It can be rough, like, you're still getting your footing. You're still trying mm-hmm. to build relationships between characters. Like, whatever. Like, some of my favorite shows have the worst first seasons ever. Yeah. But this is rooted in, like, this is a war show. And it's making me think, so we, you know, DS9 is not a show that I got into. Mm-hmm. Part of it is I think that Sisko was terrible on it. I'm sorry.
This is why we can't record the podcast in the same room.
Because you're going to hit me right now?
Because I just...
You're going to throw shit at me?
No, I want to walk out. I want to have a very theatrical exit.
Okay, well, we'll just pretend that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'll throw in a door slam
sound
effect into this. But that was also a show about war,
mm-hmm.
right? And like, I didn't go all the way into it, but I know that that's what it's about. And that was part of the, like, the unappeal for me, the mm-hmm. disappeal, the whatever the fuck
I don't
that
know
word
what
is.
You're trying to say.
But this is nothing in comparison to this. Like, this feels like, I don't know, like, it's kind of like, how dare you call this Star Trek?
Right. No, but I think the difference is that we're clearly supposed to be siding with the move to war, you know, and, like, we're supposed to be, you know, kind of stirred by like the battle cries that we're gonna see. Like it's a very pro-war series. I don't think DS9 was pro-war. In fact, if anything, I think it was very anti-war. I think it was like you saw like the horrifying and kind of devastating, grinding daily effects of it. And I think, the fact that DS9 started with like, you know, really reckoning with the occupation and like, you know, explicitly using that term, you know, of Bajor. Like, I just think DS9 really wanted to, it wanted to say, if we are drawn in to a fight, you know, and there is no way out of it, you know, yes, we will defend our people. But it wasn't.
The costs are high.
Exactly. Yeah, and also,
for everyone.
Yeah, the costs are high, but also war is never a good.
Yeah.
You know?
Where this one is like, fuck yeah, war.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's the thing, too. So Brian Fuller was the showrunner. He mm-hmm. wrote the first two episodes, mm-hmm. or that was his mastermind. Mm-hmm. And we had to, my thing was, oh, well, maybe there'll be, maybe Michael is going to grapple with the fact that the, like, racism against mm-hmm. the Klingons, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But as we're watching this episode and I'm realizing like, oh, these are different writers. Mm-hmm. This is probably an entirely different direction than what
right.
was envisioned.
Right.
I bet none of that shit's going to make it in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, it could be very interesting. Like watching the Federation, I keep saying the Federation, but Starfleet and the Klingons, you know, sort of wrestle with each other in space. Like, that could have been very interesting.
Yeah.
But part of the trouble that we're having is the formulation of the Klingons, you know? So it's not the Klingons as them in and of themselves were not the problem, although there's always going to be problematic aspects when you include them. But it's the way that they've been conceived. Having said that, I follow some really amazing people on Twitter and, you know, have heard and read some really interesting takes about the Klingon, people who had an entirely different reaction than I did, people who actually found this latest version of the Klingons just incredibly thought-provoking and really challenging and interesting in a positive way. There was someone, and I'm blanking on her name, so I'll try and tweet it out so that, you know, she gets proper credit, but who was talking about how the fact that the Klingon language isn't subtitled on the show forces us to, you know, kind of see them as a people, and, you know, it doesn't allow us for sort of to, like, kind of easily flatten them, you know?
Okay.
You know, yeah. Because we're confronted with people who have clearly have a completely different mindset and culture and way of thinking than we do. And there's going to be no easy access into that. Like, we're going to have to work for it. And I thought that was really interesting. And
although,
certainly wasn't something that I thought of.
Yeah, that is really interesting. But I guess my response to that is, depends on the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Because the majority of the audience is, I don't think, is necessarily going to interpret it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, this is a CBS audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is Star Trek fans, but, like, you know, I just kept thinking as we're watching this, like, super pro-war thing, I remember, so we didn't watch it with commercials this time, but
right.
last week we did, or I did, and you did too, because we watched it on TV, but the all of the ads for the show, we talked about this, all the ads for the shows are like that, like Navy SEALs and like just these super like pro-military, like pro, like really like
surveillance
toxic masculinity,
yeah,
all this kind of stuff, which is so the brand of CBS. So why would Star Trek be any different if this is what they're doing today,
right,
in this political climate? And that's incredibly worrying. So to me, I keep thinking, like, well, what, I don't want to say the audience isn't sophisticated, because that's not what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that the mainstream or status quo interpretation is going to be taking in all of the tropes, all of the stereotypes, all of the, like, the norms and biases that we have as a culture, and attach them to these people who are coded as brown, right? They're brown, aggressive, violent, the enemy. And if we now, it's been made very clear that we are in a ship full of, like, led by white people, that we are going to war, and that it's cool that we're building new technologies.
Right.
And that's cool.
Right. Well, what I found interesting about these alternative views of the Klingons was that it reminded me, speaking of audience, that I have a tendency, you know, a really unfortunate tendency, sometimes to assume the worst of an audience, but also to assume maybe a more unified audience than in fact there is. So yes, there's definitely like the hardcore CBS audience that's going to be consuming the show, right? But there are going to be other people consuming it in different ways. And I think they have the potential to add to the cultural kind of conversation about them and maybe shift, you know, the ways in which things are spoken about, and perhaps then shift what actually happens on the show. We know how responsive showrunners can be to fan reactions, right? So, you know, it was interesting to me because, you know, we came out of the first two episodes being like, not with it, you know? Like, here are 47 things I didn't like about this show. So to have people say like, whoa, you know, one of the things you didn't like, I actually really dug, forced me to you know, really step back and be like, okay, yeah, I can see how someone could have that, could take that view. I don't agree, but it was valuable to realize that.
Well, I would say too, like, that, you got me thinking a lot about audiences by having that, saying that. So for me, a lot of my, like, my personal work is rooted in what is the general status quo, and it is really what's the word you use? You just said it about like unifying an audience or assuming that an audience is all the same. But for me, that's, I often do that in my work very intentionally, because I'm looking at what is the majority of people watching this thinking,
right?
And that's not to dismiss that there are other takes and other audiences, because of course there is,
right?
But there is also a status quo reading of the way that the majority of people read it, and while I hope you're right, I think that, like, a lot of sort of casual viewers that aren't plugged into a fandom necessarily, they're not going to get that feedback. They're not going to see that commentary online or in articles or in, like, these little niche, like, message boards or what have you. So, I'm, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I hope that there can be space for that, but I don't, historically, that hasn't necessarily been the case.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, we have to wait and see. But I do think that if there are a number of people who are responding to this version of the Klingons, then I think there's no way that we don't see more of them, and that we don't, you know, that the showrunners, the producers, don't try and give the people more of what they've been asking for. I think, you know, there's a space for that I hope. That they can take.
And here's the thing, like, the responses to this have been really mixed. Like, mm-hmm. we had conversations at Geek Girl Con this weekend with people who loved the show.
Loved it.
And I was like,
could not believe it.
Like, it was so
I thought they were shitting me.
Yeah, but people also loved the movie, the J.J. Abrams movies, and I fucking hated those too.
So, I loved the first one because it was so... I did. And I feel no shame. For one thing, it was Yeah, you're right. I shouldn't. And you know what? I don't. So
no, you don't.
But I love the first ones. The next three, garbage.
Yeah. I hated the first one so much I couldn't watch the other ones. But, like, the point, you know, I think that a lot of Star Trek fans are just so excited that there's a new show. And
yeah.
that it's hard to be critical when mm-hmm. you're just so excited about a thing.
Yeah.
And that's, I get that. Hopefully that, like, the be critical of the media you love thing will come into play in mm-hmm. a little bit. But, you know, I don't know. Like, maybe we're in the minority right now of really hating this shit. But I'm, like, I watched this episode and I was... So when you watch an episode together and you do a podcast together, you try not to talk during the episode because then you, like, burn the cast, so to speak. But it was so hard not to talk through this whole thing and be like, what the fuck is happening?
Seriously.
He put her in... he's like, you're wrong. We're not building biological weapons. Let me show you what we're doing. And then they transport out of the captain's wing into the engineering wing of the same ship, which I don't think I've ever really seen happen on a show before in that way. And then he sticks her in a pod. And we're talking about biological weapons. So you're sitting here being like, oh my God, what are you going to do to this woman?
Right.
And then it was so dumb.
Well, he says, like, you know, I want to show you why you're wrong, why we're not working on weapons.
Let me lock you into a cell.
Yeah, so I'm going to show you this thing. Oh, ha, ha, ha. It is actually going to be an awesome weapon. You know?
Right.
It has other uses, but we're really going to use it as a weapon.
Oh, my God. It was like... it was so dumb. It was so dumb. And then that shot of all of the, like, locations you could go with, like, the snap of a finger, and you're just like...
It reminded me of that Next Generation episode, and I'm blanking on the name, so at me, at Ebony Astor, and remind me which episode it was, but where Picard, Data, and I think Geordi are in an away team. It's this, you know, piece of alien tech that can immediately transport someone... to any place in the universe, but it's random. You can't choose where it's going to be. And it looked like some of the same backdrops were used. It just seemed like a conscious shout out to that episode.
Yeah, all right.
I'm going to watch it as soon as we're done recording because it was great.
Tell me which one it is when you figure it out.
Okay. You're going to be asleep in 20 minutes.
That's true. I am. Okay, can we talk, before we wrap up, I really like Saru.
Me too.
He's the only other one that I really like. And, like, he says to her, you were always a good officer until you weren't.
So good.
So good.
No, when he said, I'm going to protect my captain better than you did. Yeah. Hello. Saru is not playing.
I know.
Saru and then is cold-blooded.
When he's like, mutiny aside, she's the smartest Starfleet officer I've ever known. And
my God, Doug Jones.
Yeah. And part of me was like, oh my God, shut the fuck up. Like, at this point in the show, I'm just like, I hate all of you. But I also was like... Oh, like I'm already building their relationship in mm-hmm. my brain of, like, being super bonded and tight, you know? Like, I want that.
You know, join each other for breakfast, eat blueberries every morning.
Oh, yeah, blueberries.
It's going to be a great time.
All right, let's go get some blueberries.
Let's go get some blueberries.
I don't really like blueberries, actually.
Can we talk in next week's episode about how the tech seems weirdly too futuristic for what's supposed to come before Enterprise?
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Okay, let's talk about that next time.
Sweet. All right, y'all. We're going to wrap this up. Thank you for joining us. We will be back next week for more hot takes.
And you'll be asking yourself, why are you doing this to yourselves?
Yeah. All right, y'all. Bye.
Bye.